What's going on, folks? First and foremost, this is going to be a little unique episode today because I'm by myself at the moment because Will's alarm did not go off. So I'm gonna just get started because we already have limitations in production here. This is not our studio. I don't know if you know this. This is not my $7 gorillion mansion in the Hollywood Hills. This is simply a production studio that we go to shoot these episodes. So there's like other people and other podcasts, not as good as ours, obviously, but other podcasts that are going to be, you know, shooting right after us. So I wanted to get started on this. So it's going to be a little bit of a weird start, but let's be real. Okay. Come on. You know, you're just, maybe we can get a little comfortable together. Maybe we can do a single one-on-one session, you know, at least until Will gets here. I know he's the beauty and the bronze and the brain of the podcast, but, you know, I'm gonna try to do my best.
I'm saying it, dude. I've been drinking pre-workout already. I'm ready to run through a brick wall, baby. Okay.
Name is Hassan.
What a fucking weaselly little liar, dude.
So let's get started immediately on a story that I was going to yell over Will about regardless. And obviously today's episode is going to get started with talking about the Haitian immigrants. For those of you who are unfamiliar, there are approximately about 14,000 to 15,000 Haitian migrants. I don't know if I should say migrant or asylum seeker. I don't know what the proper legal designation would be in this circumstance, but they are currently inside Texas. They're inside of American borders. They are at the border at Del Rio. And the United States has so far removed 6,000 Haitian asylum seekers on the border at Del Rio, and it's planning on 6 deportation flights on Tuesday. And of course, this is a illegal process, denying immigrants their legal right to asylum is an illegal thing that the Biden administration is doing. I'm just going to roll the video really quickly to show you some of the images that went viral over the weekend of the Customs and Border Patrol yeehaw motherfuckers that were basically using their reins as whips as they were forcefully trying to expel Haitian migrants that were crossing the border back into Mexico to get food, only to come back to the encampment that they have in the underpass on a Texas highway. So let's take a look at the images that came out over the weekend.
The White House condemned U.S. Border Patrol agents on Monday who were seen using a whip-like cord to block Haitian migrants carrying supplies into the U.S. from Mexico. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said she had seen some of the footage, calling it unacceptable.
We just saw this footage. It's horrible to watch. I just have to get more information on it. I can't imagine what the scenario is where that would be appropriate. I'm certainly not suggesting that, but we've just seen the footage earlier this morning.
Reuters drone footage captured.
So first and foremost, I just got to say, fuck you, Jen Psaki, okay? And fuck this White House and fuck the Biden administration. I mean, look, I was riding with Biden pretty fucking hard these past couple of weeks because of the Afghan withdrawal. All the fake friends and liberal media immediately dropped him. They dropped him like a bad habit. They just started ripping into him. I was one of the brave defenders. I was a Biden bro, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to put that to rest. I'm afraid I'm no longer a Biden bro. And the reason for why, all jokes aside, is because of this. This has been an ongoing process. Now, the reason why I say fuck Jen Psaki and fuck the White House for this is because she's shocked and appalled by the cord that they were using. It was just reins, okay? And the aesthetics of it are appalling to them. Except this is the very same administration that has continued the Trump-era Stephen Miller deportation protocol called Title 42, and they're taking advantage of that. That is precisely what they're currently using to deny these Haitian migrants, these refugee seekers, I mean, these asylum seekers, these refugees, These people that are just simply trying to survive their legal right to seek asylum within United States borders. So I'm just going to go over that really quickly. So this is a Rolling Stones article. Biden channels Stephen Miller to deport Haitian asylum seekers. For those of you who are unaware, President Biden is talking about COVID-19. This is the Title 42 is basically a COVID-19 provision. Some might even say one of the few COVID-19 protocols that the Trump administration used, which is to deny asylum seekers their right, their legal right to get asylum or seek asylum within the United States, and purge them from the country without any of that, without any of those legal processes continuing. The law basically, as it stands, protects the right of refugees to apply to asylum once they're inside of the United States. But Title 42 is a public health provision that the Trump administration implemented in March 2020, okay, that allows for the immediate deportation of anyone and everyone they choose to use this on. And, of course, the provision was reportedly pushed by Trump immigration hawk and also famous virulent racist, a bald man, Stephen Miller, and it's based on the idea that migrants pose a unique public health risk as the United States attempts to combat the pandemic. Really suspicious considering the fact that back in March 2020, the Trump administration was still pretty much denying that COVID was a big problem, and yet they had no issue utilizing the awesome powers that the CDC has to deport migrants. So, you know, that's wonderful. That's really great that they were doing that. It's awesome. And, of course, public health experts have said that it makes no sense from a public health perspective. It makes no sense at all, says Dr. Ronald Waldman, president of the human rights group Doctors of the World. The prohibition for crossing the border has been applied selectively to asylum seekers. Students are still allowed to cross the border. There's a lot of people crossing the border. It's a laughable line of reasoning. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're trying to convince people of the importance of public health and to listen to the advice and recommendation of public health authorities while they're simultaneously utilizing the powers granted to the CDC, the broad powers granted to the CDC to, you know, enact white nativist immigration policies. But that was the Trump administration. That's different. That's supposed to be the racist guys. Those are the bad guys. Who built the cages, right? That's what they used to say when they were filling those cages up with babies. And now we have an answer to who built the cages. It was the Obama administration, which deported more people than the Trump administration did, by the way, a fact that many people fail to consider. And also using Title 42, which the Biden administration is currently defending in courts after a federal judge decided or ordered the Biden administration to stop using Title 42 to expel migrants from the country. The Biden administration is continuing with its usage while also simultaneously defending its usage. So when Jen Psaki goes on and says things like, oh, this is horrible, or when the Department of Homeland Security head, I forget his name, but when he goes on national television and says, oh, these images are horrifying, it's like, you did this. These images are a product of your personal cruelty, the cruelty that you choose to enact upon thousands and thousands of people that are simply trying to survive. You are doing this, it doesn't matter. It's not the whipping that is the worst offense. The whipping makes it aesthetically more cruel and also visible, and it invokes the imagery that we've seen time and time again of slave patrols doing the exact same thing back in the day to black men and women that were seeking freedom. However, this, of course, is a product of the cruelty that we subject thousands of people to on a daily basis as a part of our immigration policies, as a part of our white nativist, horrifyingly racist immigration policies. Okay? Now, and it doesn't end there. It's not just the hypocrisy that's really incredibly frustrating and super apparent. I mean, basically all the liberals just basically fuck the immigrants. They don't give a shit. Because you're not really hearing a lot of, very similar to the Obama administration, you're not hearing a lot of people yell about this or get upset about this until this very moment, of course. And even then, I feel like this is going to most likely die down. Part of that is, of course, because the Biden administration is supposedly terrified of the reactionary commentary and criticism that they get. This is, of course, paired up with the fact that the Senate parliamentarian, an unelected position that you could very easily overrule or replace, fire and replace like the Bush administration did, decided that the budget reconciliation could not have a amnesty provision for all undocumented immigrants that are currently living within U.S. borders. That includes TPS, temporary protected status, and also DACA, the Dreamers. This was supposed to be an amnesty provision that was added on to the budget reconciliation, the $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation that the Democrats were advocating for as a part of their infrastructure, their comprehensive infrastructure bill. But the Senate parliamentarian ruled over it. And of course, the Democrats immediately were like, oh, man, we're just so powerless. $15 minimum wage. Sorry, can't do it. We're just powerless. Senate parliamentarian said no. Guess what? Under the George W. Bush administration, the Senate parliamentarian was fucking fired, okay, and immediately replaced. It took two disagreements for the Bush administration to be like, fuck you, you're out. And should have been out, in my opinion, if the Democrats truly cared about fighting for a $15 minimum wage or truly cared about fighting for amnesty, a very popular legislative item, okay, that Americans broadly agree with, something that fucking Ronald Reagan did, okay? Ronald Reagan is a monster, he's racist, but like Ronald Reagan looks like a fucking angel compared to every contemporary president post 9/11, post DHS, with respect to just simply exclusively with respect to offering amnesty to immigrants that live within our borders. And it doesn't end there. Of course, President Biden, as I said, is using Title 42 to expel asylum seekers without hearing their right to hearings. Now, when President Donald Trump, the previous president, the orange man, Mr. Trump, who is bad, of course, when he invoked Title 42, citing COVID-19, he expelled 440,000 people. That's a lot of people that he expelled using this. 440,000 people. Well, guess what? So far, under President Biden, who's supposed to be good and a Democrat, who literally ran on no deportation the first 100 years, gone, not a real thing, okay, who ran against putting kids in cages, Jack. You know, he was going to cut the malarkey, okay? He was the Mac attack. Well, he has currently expelled 690,000 people. 690,000 people have been expelled using Title 42, claiming that, you know, these immigrants are dirty and that they are bringing diseases in this country. If you're familiar with America's racist-ass immigration history, you would recognize that the Bracero program had a similar, near if not nearly identical concept for Latino migrant workers that were coming into this country that we brought in to the country to utilize and use their labor and exploit their labor, and we purged them in a similar capacity. So America's always done things like this. And right now, about 300 asylum seekers are sleeping on the ground on the Mexican side of the border due to no food at Del Rio. Others fear that the U.S. will deport them without asylum processing, though Mexico is also making arrests. Now, the reason why Mexico is also making arrests is because of yet another Trump-era policy that all Latin American countries were subjected to ensure that they were the first line of defense against the U.S. border, that they would keep all migrants within their borders. If you are a migrant from Guatemala and you reach to Honduras, you reach Honduras, it's over. You have to stay there. That's your first harbor, your first safe harbor. You can't come all the way to America, except, you know, there are people from Mexico coming into the United States. So clearly these safe harbors are not necessarily all that safe, even for the individuals that are currently living within those borders. So, you know, that's where we're at right now with respect to the Biden administration's horrifyingly white nativist immigration policies. And it's unfortunately not all that different from the Trump administration's horrifyingly white nativist immigration policies. The only difference is that the media scrutiny is a little less. Jen Psaki gets to go and get a puff piece written about her in the New York Times while she's simultaneously handling this PR crisis for the White House. And by that, I mean she's lying, because that's what you're supposed to do as the White House press secretary. She's going on, you know, morning shows to talk about the situation, saying, oh, we condemn the action of the CBP. But we are still a nation of laws. We are still a nation that has borders. This kind of rhetoric is nearly identical to what the Trump administration said. And these actions are literally identical to what the Trump administration did. The only difference is that Jen Psaki is, or Joe Biden is, not saying that these people are coming from shithole countries, and they're not saying that these people are dogs and they're dehuman, they're subhuman or something like that, but they're still behaving like they are subhuman. They're still enacting that policy. And let me just end this on this final note, because Will just walked into the studio, so we're going to move on to a different story. And the final note is this. When you see images of Haitian migrants coming over the border, you have to remember there's a reason for that. One, I mean, the background is that they left Haiti because of political turmoil and because of the original earthquake that occurred a decade ago, or almost two decades, I don't even know. They went to Brazil. They worked there for a duration. Brazil also had a black population, so it was a little bit easier for them to assimilate despite not speaking Portuguese. And then they moved over to Chile, which they did not have, and to other countries in Central America when the opportunities dried up. And those other Central American countries did not necessarily offer the same amount of opportunities, and also had a lot more racist actions against some of these Haitian migrants. And they finally made their way up to the United States. This is like also a bunch of Haitian migrants that are seeking refuge, seeking asylum here in the United States as a consequence of the gigantic Haitian earthquake that occurred and a hurricane that happened, all directly after their president was assassinated. You have criminal gangs that are currently ruling the streets. There is absolutely just absolute chaos in Haiti. A lot of that chaos is centuries of U.S. policy of destabilization in Haiti. It's directly a consequence of our foreign policy in Haiti, like the way we treated the only successful slave rebellion in the Western Hemisphere, okay, for obvious reasons. And these people are suffering. And they're suffering both from political turmoil that we cause, and they're suffering from the consequences of natural disasters and climate change. Disasters accelerated and created exclusively as a consequence of climate change. And this, what you're seeing, when you're seeing these people like rushing into the U.S. border, this is America's future climate change policy. I've said this time and time again. There's only two ways out of this situation. Either you improve the material conditions of the host nations where a lot of people are trying to immigrate into the United States from, okay, and you stop destabilizing these nations. You allow them to prosper on their own instead of, you know, use them as ripe opportunities for extracting natural resources or exploiting them or, you know, destroying everything that they've ever built as a consequence of them, like, you know, unfortunately deciding to go socialist or something. Instead of doing all of that, you have to allow these nations to grow and prosper without conditional IMF and World Bank loans that actually cripple the nation, and implement austerity measures as another form of economic imperialism. Or you do what we are doing here. Increase the dial of cruelty slowly but surely, so that the conditions are so horrifying for refugees, for asylum seekers that choose to roll the dice and come into the United States, the conditions are so horrifying for them that they choose to stay behind in a destabilized and crippled nation. And that's precisely what you're watching here when you see images of people locked up in cages, when you see images of thousands of people like sleeping in an underpass on the ground, when you see images of women crossing the border back into Mexico to get food because they can't do it here in the United States, that's America's climate change policy in action. And I suspect that if we continue doing this under Democratic administrations, under Republican administrations, we're not that far off from going back to the Bracero program and using Zyklon B. We're not that far off from, you know, doing the same kind of policies that the Nazis looked towards and said, that's exactly what we want to do here. This is fucking awesome. So, you know, always remember that and do with that information what you will. But all right, so Will's here. What's up, Will? What's going on? So we're gonna move on from that to some lighter load. You know, not like load bearing.
There's not
like
much
this one
that isn't lighter than the Zyklon B reference. God damn, bro.
Yeah, we once did that. We were deworming and delicing Mexican migrants.
How we were treating COVID in the United States? No. We were deworming it?
No.
It's a great thing we can talk about right now as a transition. I haven't experienced the feeling of being late for like a test or a class for decades now. You know that feeling as a kid where you woke up and it was just blind panic and you like thrash around in the bed? Uh-huh. Like, oh my God. Just like sweating, grabbing whatever clothes you can and just running out the door. Yeah, that's what I experienced this morning. My alarm just didn't go off.
It's all good. I just like... You know, it's not a problem. You know, we're having fun.
Yeah,
you know, we're trying to do fun stuff. So
I haven't had that in the run of our show. I haven't really been late. That's kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, it happens.
I feel bad. Sorry, audience. I'm human. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's all good. I was filling them in on.
You know what I feel like now? I feel like Samson in the Bible.
I don't get the reference.
His hair made him invincible.
Yeah.
I cut my hair. I feel like my life has gone to shit immediately.
I mean, it looks really good.
I feel like I had the power of Christ in my locks.
It looks really good.
I look young and hot, but my Christ-like power is gone.
I think it looks great, though. So, I mean, I was going to yell at you for being late, but then I saw how hot you look, and I was like, fuck it, dude. You can't. Yeah, everybody knows we have policy here, okay? Fear and molding policy. You can't yell at hot people.
Yes.
Hot people can get away with shit.
That's right.
And Will is a hot person now. Why do you even have a band on your arm? You can't even fucking, you know, do your hair
anymore. I'm telling you, there's a remnant. There's a remnant of the past.
Yeah.
It's a remnant to my Christ-like power, my hair.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... your outfit is ridiculous, dude.
I literally just grabbed what was near the bed. And
You got your fucking CrossFit shoes on.
Yeah.
You're wearing...
They're still dirty from hiking with my dog.
You're wearing like the shortest of shorts.
Yeah, we might have a meat slip.
Yeah, there's like your dick's about to pop out.
Our numbers have been all right. I'm trying to juice them a little bit with a little meat slip. You know?
Okay,
a little traditional just show Super Bowl.
Show a little cock. For
a little Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction. Whoopsie daisy.
A little Janet Jackson.
Yeah, dude. You're just talking about how we can be better to Haitian immigrants. I'm just flopping a little cock out to get the numbers up. You know,
I feel that. For those of you who are listening and you know, don't have access to YouTube or whatever, you have the shorter shorts, but I was going to talk about your hair. You now have a mullet faux hawk kind
of
thing.
Yeah, it's like
going.
A full Viking thing,
and I fucking love it. And I've been growing out my hair as well with the hopes that, like, you know, I want to see what it looks like when it's like mid-length. I'm almost there. And then after that, I was thinking about going mullet, but.
I was just, I was blind most of the time. B, every time I tried to squat, the bar would lay on my hair.
Ooh, that's
and
not
it,
good.
Like, I felt like I was getting taken from behind every time I would do a squat. And then I was always eating my hair too. I'd be like bending over to eat and I'd be like, and I was like, all right, it's enough.
It's fucking terrible.
The other thing, and maybe this is a more compelling thing to talk about and kind of the actual root of why I cut my hair, is I feel like the long hair for me, like whenever I change my hair, my appearance kind of marks the end of an era, right? And in a weird way, I kind of needed closure on the COVID era. I needed closure on COVID Will, where it's not like COVID is over. COVID isn't over. That's not what I'm saying.
You heard it here first, folks. Will's going full COVID.
Hell yeah.
they need to give me a Toby Keith concert and give it to me quick.
No, but certainly I think it's like one of those things where I changed like my psyche so much to survive during COVID. I had to be all right with so many things. It was almost like a prisoner's mentality, right? Like being in your room, working out in your room, working in your room, you know, just doing everything in a 5x5 and like not aspiring to go out or do things or looking forward to the weekend or all these things that seem so normal and so human. And I think it was like, all right, you need to turn the page. You
Bro,
need to,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. You
this
don't.
This weekend, you were like, you were fucking playing Yahtzee with your friends. And, you know, I was laying.
Excuse me, sir. I was playing Harry Potter's Defense Against the Dark Arts duel.
Yeah. I was like, Will, what are you doing? He's like, oh, just having fun, dude. Just having fun with my friends, you know, playing board games. I was like, He's like, you want to come? I'm like,
No, do you remember what you did? You sent me a picture of one of your legs in pajamas up on the couch.
Yeah, and that's what I think.
Even your no was lazy.
No, I was just like, dude, no shot. Yeah, I sent him a dick shot, and he's out here fucking complaining, dude. Anyway, but yeah, no, I was in pain over the weekend. I just like my back is just like fucking. It's over, dude. I'm 30. It's over. Like I work out all the time and I still like every time I work out, it flares up again. It's not like an injury, but at this point it's like something I have to live with that I have to just like strengthen the surrounding muscles.
Yeah.
Until it's just like, you know, and just stretch every morning. Like I just lay on a lacrosse ball or it's so good though.
It's so intense.
It's so bad, but it's so good.
I know what you mean.
But if I stand up for an extended period of time, like my back just shoots up all the way up my spine. There's like pains. I can like feel the muscles contracting from like standing.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Very weird situation. Anyway, just
what
like,
else do we have going on in the country other than this bullshit? You know, I wish they just, you know, had a wall and then that way they wouldn't do this stuff.
Yeah, totally. That's like, I mean, it's not different. It's no different than the fucking Trump era policy.
I know.
Like, we already had a wall.
I think that's the most depressing part is it's like, I always think of the lyric from the Who song where it's like, we met the new boss. He's the same as the old boss. It's like, holy crap, man.
All right. So there's a couple things we're going to talk about. There's a UN General Assembly going on in New York, and, you know, all the world leaders are there. And, of course, Brazil is there as well.
Whoa.
And they are the only, the Brazilian leader and his team, Jair Bolsonaro and his team are the only, like, G20 world leader that is unvaccinated.
Oh, really?
Bolsonaro's got COVID, like, 11 times. Like, he's literally... Bolsonaro personally is he's the perfect case study for like natural immunity, not great. Like it's not consistent.
Bolsonaro.
Like you can be very lucky if you get natural immunity and actually have like, you know, some studies have shown that you can have as much immunity, if not even better immunity than like one of the vaccines.
Right.
But it's not consistent. And Bolsonaro's gotten it like 11 times or some shit. So
that's incredible.
God is trying to kill this man and he just fucking keeps surviving. I don't know how. I don't know if you know this or not, but he had a hiccup attack and they had to pump out feces out of his nose, like fucking hundreds of pounds of poo-poo, caca, were pumped out of his nose for like a week. That was like the last thing that happened. It was like a month ago.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How did the poop... getting his nose, Hassan.
I think that's just how they. He had like a. I think it was like a gastric problem.
No.
They no, pump that's your. Not how the they pump the poop. Works. They pump the poop out of your nose. They like shove a fucking. They just like shove a tube down your fucking nose, down your throat, all the
whatever
way to your
happened
fucking,
to a good old fashioned enema?
I don't know.
Why is it coming out his nose? We have a hole fucking, for that.
I don't know. I just like you can't. It's not coming out of the butthole. It's not.
He the had, nose?
Yeah, they had fucking, they were
so
pumping.
The poop wasn't in his nose. The poop was in his, what,
the poop
high
was
intestine?
In his, like, intestines, yeah. I don't know what the inner workings of Bolsonaro are, but, like, they were pumping that shit, dude. They were pumping that shit directly
and
that, out of his
and
nose.
And an overabundance of poop caused hiccups?
What's up?
Medicine's made up, dude. Bullshit. This is all bull. I'm off the fucking COVID train. I'm off the vaccination train.
medicine's a, it's a fable. What the hell are you telling me right now?
He had poop being pumped out of his fucking nose, dude. It's a common medical thing.
No, no.
It's called the nasogastric tube, and it goes through the mouth and down the esophagus into the stomach. Sometimes surgeons and radiologists.
And this is a cure for hiccups.
Well, he had like uncontrollable hiccups for like a week, I think. And then,
and that's caused by poo?
Yeah, and it's just like poop congestion.
You've ruined my life.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Why?
Anytime I see a hot person hiccuping, I'm going to be like, they're just jam-packed with poop.
They're ready to...
They're just ready to pop.
Yeah. They're ready to fucking have a tube shoved down their fucking nose.
God, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bolsonaro at the UN conference in New York.
So he recovers from the poop thing, and then like a week later, it's like it comes out that like he's a cuck.
He's actually a cuckold.
Yeah, he's got like there's this like sexy ass firefighter that like fucked his wife, and Bolsonaro's children are like fucking hyping the sexy firefighter up, or like Bolsonaro's you know, Bolsonaro sees him as a family friend. And then of course, like, not only is he a cuck, but like that's not what gets him in Brazil. They start calling him gay. So they're like, "Hi, you're gay." Like,
you like the guy that might be jam packed with poop, and I might be a cuckold, but you better not call me.
Yeah.
Gay.
Oh, dude, that's in Brazil. Yeah, yeah, are you kidding me? It's fucking over. Like, so that was going on, and now he's in fucking New York and just spreading COVID. His health minister, the third one. Because he's replaced them throughout COVID. Like,
yeah, because they're not giving the right information.
Yeah, they're not giving the wrong information.
Yeah.
So his current health minister is out in New York, okay? He's out in New York just fucking spreading COVID. Like, spreading that nice Brazilian...
That carnival COVID.
Yeah, that fucking good strain, that good shit. And... he's just casually doing high-level bioterrorism, but the Brazilian health minister who tested positive for COVID was staying at the same hotel as the president, Joseph Robinette Biden, in New York City. Oh, my
God. They better get Joe in that bubble.
Yeah.
They better make Joe the bubble boy.
Yeah, Joe's like, this is why we don't leave. I don't know why he's a Kate Kona, but yeah. This is why we don't leave Delaware, Jack.
Yeah, dude.
I should have never left Delaware.
A stiff wind could kill our president right now.
That's true. He went to the UN yesterday to watch President Bolsonaro's speech. He's shaking hands with Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who then also went on to meet Joe Biden in the White House. So, we know that it's not like fomide, spread. It's not like through hand-to-hand contact, but...
good word.
You know, it's just not like... it's not great. It's not great that, high-level Brazilian officials that are supposed to be in charge of public health and safety measures in Brazil are fucking here doing bioterrorism. There's that famous photo of Bolsonaro with his entire delegation eating pizza outside because they're not allowed indoors to restaurants because New York has, like, COVID vax requirements. So, it's just fucking wonderful stuff. It's great.
That is...
it's a clown world.
That's pretty funny.
You know, shouts out to Bolsonaro doing the most.
I'm gonna go get a classic New York slice at Sbarro. It's my favorite local New York pizza place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think he's invincible. Let's be real. Bolsonaro's just fucking invincible.
What is it about some politicians where they just get that Ross Butin? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like, I think the evil. Like,
keeps him alive.
Like, this motherfucker tortured people, okay? Like, when he's like a military dictator, like, literally ran on saying, like, you know, military dictatorship, not so bad. We should do it. I want to do it. I mean, I'm Jair Bolsonaro.
That got progressively more Portuguese as it went on.
No, everybody says, like, when I think I haven't nailed the Brazilian accent yet. Yeah. Everyone always says, like, you sound cholo when you do it.
You
like,
started cholo and you eased into it. By the end, you sounded like Busquets from City of God.
I'm trying to fucking spread COVID.
Okay, now it's cholo again.
No, that's not. I'm saying like, that's Portuguese.
That's good, but the end was very...
it's cholo. All Portuguese. Like, Portuguese is like, like, there's like a lot of these like weird noises that like you don't have that in Spanish, like, in cholo shit.
It's got promise.
Okay, yeah, so, I'm Bolsonaro.
Dude just saying his own
name. Yeah, it's just
like a Pokemon.
Yeah, he's like, I got caca in my nose. Okay. speaking of, let's move on from the UN General Assembly to what really matters.
Oh.
Bill Gates.
Oh.
Bill Gates went to PBS NewsHour and absolutely got fucking demolished by Judy Woodruff, who asked some interesting questions. Now, for those of you who are uninitiated, unaware, Bill and Melinda Gates split. And in the aftermath of that split, which was devastating, Melinda hit me up. I mean, please, girl. God damn, I'm
Melinda,
single.
What you doing, girl?
Yeah, what are you up to, Melinda? Yo, you know.
Ain't nothing micro about my chip.
Exactly. That's right. You know, it's fucking macro hard up in this bitch. What's up?
Trying to give you that terabyte.
Yeah. But yeah, Melinda has just been fucking girl bossing and slay queening. Yeah, like, yeah. Her fucking PR team did a devastating job on Bill. Including like 11 daily Beast articles about how Bill Gates was just like totally fucking tight with Jeffrey Epstein. And you know, that's a question that I would ask. Like, if I am
tight, like you flew on the plane, or tight, like
just so much more than that, but
more than the plane,
so much more than that.
Oh man,
dude.
The plane was like the smoking gun.
So much, like he saw, allegedly, according to reports, like he saw Jeffrey Epstein as a ticket for, you know, winning a Nobel Prize. He was, because
he knew all the schmaltzy. That's so funny.
Like he saw
the road to the Nobel Prize went through the most notorious pedophile, like, boss.
I need to point something out here.
Please do.
Melinda Gates looks a lot like your mom.
What? I've never seen Melinda Gates.
Like, the same prototype.
Oh, my. She looks like a mix of my mom and my Aunt Gay.
Yeah.
That's like, gonna freak me right out.
Yeah, it's just like she's like a powerful Midwestern woman.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, she got those like fucking Dutch jeans and shit. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
German.
Never been sick once.
Yeah. So she's like, she does kind of look like, yeah. She, it's just besides the point. But anyway, so Will's too turned on now to continue the conversation.
Okay, listen, that first appeal to Miss Gates fell on dead ears, but this one's real. Trying to get real Oedipal with it. All right, what did Judy say?
So let's take a look in a conversation that they had in PBS NewsHour. This is what Judy Woodruff asked Bill about.
It was reported at that time that you had a number of meetings with Jeffrey Epstein, who, when you met him 10 years ago, he was convicted of soliciting prostitution from minors. What did you know about him when you were meeting with him, as you've said yourself, in the hopes of raising money?
I had dinners with him. I regret doing that. He had relationships with people he said, you know, would give to global health, which is a interest I have, you know, not nearly enough philanthropy goes in that direction. You know, those meetings were a mistake. They didn't result in
me having
what
sex with minors.
He purported, and I cut them off. You know, that goes back a long time ago now. There's nothing new on that.
It was reported there's that you continue to meet with him over several years. And that, in other words, a number of meetings. What did you do when you found out about his background?
Well, I've said I regretted having those dinners. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing new on that.
Is there a lesson for you, for anyone else looking at this?
Well, he's dead. So, in general, you always have to be careful.
I think we just figured out
who killed Jeffrey.
Yeah, he goes, he's dead. So there's a lesson. What's the lesson, motherfucker? Like, you know,
yeah.
What's the lesson?
The lesson is don't fuck around with Microsoft or I might have to fucking bury you in your jail cell.
Oh, yeah. He's like, come on, he's dead. I didn't have to learn a lesson.
You know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate on this.
Oh, dude, don't do it.
I'm going to play devil's advocate on this. Okay, there are so few billionaires and they're all kind of evil. That I think, like, you kind of have to, like, if you want to hang out with other billionaires and isolate yourself from the general population, well, they're all monsters, right? I think if you dig into billionaires, like, if you're like, hey, let's really get into the nitty gritty of how this billionaire became a billionaire, none of them are like, oh, this guy became a billionaire by, you know, being really good to people.
Yeah, that's not super how that fair. Works.
No, they're all kind of a little bit they're monsters. They're so if you're gonna hang monsters. Out with a billionaire, you're gonna run that risk with almost any billionaire.
I love the idea that like Bill Gates needs to do philanthropic like fundraising to fucking do health measures in Africa. Yeah. Like it's like, yeah, dude, Jeffrey Epstein is the golden ticket to fundraising. Like you couldn't like talk to at least like I don't know.
Well, that's the other thing. Like that's
but you're right. He can't,
but that's
he can't,
exactly what I'm saying though. Is like he considered this man the gateway to the New York elite. That like the richest people in New York. So they were all, you know, fucking kids. Like all these like super like pharaoh wealthy people, they got shit going on.
Oh yeah. I mean, we'll never hear about it, obviously, because like, you know.
Yeah, any weak links gets just hung like, in their jail cell.
Just like what Bill Gates just said. Yeah. You know, he's dead.
He's dead.
So
let's just move past it.
Yeah, let's move past it, dude. All my
past is in the past.
So the reason why I love this story though is because like, you know, it's so perfectly captures that like we have this way of idolizing billionaires because we have to believe in meritocracy. That like,
I think it's more than that. I think you're forgetting one very big thing.
What? PR?
The idea of a billionaire makes everyone on the planet think that they could be a billionaire.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like for Americans, we don't have a royal family. We don't have people that were just arbitrarily made exorbitantly wealthy and get magazine covers and live this glamorous life that we can jerk Hollywood. Off to, right?
Hollywood's there's like a, turning into that.
There's now. A reason that The Crown smashes every award show. It's life porn. It's like life fantasy porn where it's like, I bet I could be a great princess. Billionaires for chuds. That's the equivalent. If you're a first day entrepreneur and you're running a pyramid scheme and you have to justify fucking everybody in your circle over, these are your icons.
It's Sigma Grindset.
Yeah.
Sigma
Grindset. This is your dream team right here.
Yeah. And you're absolutely correct on that. But it's also, you know, a reinforced idea that like meritocracy is real and these guys actually deserve to have demigod like fucking levels of wealth and power because they do. Because if you don't have meritocracy at the foundation of a capitalist organization of a society, then you are left with probability and luck, which is the main factor that gets people like Jeffrey Epstein into the positions that they're in. And it gets people like Bill Gates into the positions that they're in and Jeff Bezos and everyone else. So obviously that includes myself and you as well. Like we work hard. That's certainly important, but so does the fucking teacher in Oklahoma that's like for literally sure. driving Uber after school so she can, you know, put food on the fucking table. Like that person's working just as hard as Bill Gates is, I promise you. It's just that their spawn point is different. And that is a hugely, supremely important fact that most people just seem to overlook on purpose, because if they do actually look at that, they will realize like, well, what the fuck? No one should have this kind of level of like wealth and power.
And I think the other thing is like some people work hard because they just want to live. Not everybody wants to rule the fucking world. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
I think that's another big thing is like some people just want to have a nice, quiet life with their family or the people around them. And they don't all have ambitions of like, when I get my yacht, I can, you know, heli-lift it to Aspen. And then I can fuck on my yacht in Aspen, which will be a new thing.
Point I was trying to make is Bill Gates is not fucking smart, dude. He's not like any smarter than the average fucking Joe. Like, as a matter of fact, I would go so far as say that the average Joe probably be like, that Jeffrey Epstein guy is kind of sus, okay?
Yeah.
What's up? Like, you couldn't fucking Google his background to see that he, like, fucks girls, like, young girls? Like, you kidding me? Like, get the fuck out of here. You knew. You didn't give a shit. You foolishly thought that, like, no one would hear about it. Or even if they did hear about it in the end, it wouldn't matter because you're fucking Bill Gates. And that's precisely how he can, like, you know, have interviews like this. And not every interview is like, the fuck are you doing? You, like, hung out with, like, a famous prolific pedophile.
Yeah. Can I be honest? If I was Bill Gates, why the hell did he take this interview? you're done as Bill Gates. You've had your career. Microsoft is set. It's like, the reason I pose this question is like, is Bill Gates trying to do something in the public eye again? Is he going to like run for office in somewhere or?
No, he doesn't have to run for office. He already runs. He does so much more like devastating fucking.
But do you understand schools. What I'm saying? Why is he doing an interview with Judy?
Public relations. I think that people are probably justifiably angry at Bill Gates, not just for this, but also because of all the incredible efforts that he put in to make sure that the IP was blocked for the mRNA vaccines and for all vaccinations for COVID, despite the fact that like he's a champion, a crusader for, you know, healthcare.
Thought he was going into a puff piece. He walked into a wood chipper.
Yeah. This out, though. I want to see, like, can you roll it back a little bit and then get started? I want to see, like, how he fully answered.
He thought he was going to repair his image. Instead, he was linked with Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, my God. The Qers are going to masturbate to this.
Yeah.
Anyone else looking at this?
Well, he's dead, so... You know, in general, you always have to be careful.
Be careful.
And, you know, I'm very proud of what we've done in philanthropy, very proud of the work of the foundation. That's what I get up every day and focus on.
That was such a weird answer. Yeah. Him saying he's dead and smiling is a weird answer,
man. Yeah, it's like fucking Kevin Spacey shit right there, dude. Oh my God. Bill Gates, billionaires, they're just like us. They're just fucking dumbasses. And yet people just assume for some weird reason that they are not. I don't know why. I've been watching. Let's talk about some fun stuff. I've been watching a lot of Twin Peaks. You're a big David Lynch fan, right? I assume.
So Lynch is one of those guys who, he reminds me a little bit of Stephen King in the way that he constructs stories. Where like a lot of the information is so fun, and like the overall journey is more important than the destination. Because sometimes I feel like his endings or his resolutions don't hit, but like there are a lot of pieces. Like Blue Velvet is like one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to be a bad boy.
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, spoiler, it's like alert. Dennis Hopper. He's like huffing nitrous and he's like, oh, I'm so fucking bad. He's just so evil in that movie. He's a psycho.
It's very unsettling. Like the way he moves through scenes is. It makes you uncomfortable. I like it.
I think it's one of the best, like, dreamlike kind of like unsettling, almost like a body horror. It's very strange stuff.
I love that. Like, first of all, I feel like the significance of Twin Peaks, from what I understand, is that it was like prestige television on network at a time when like no such thing ever existed. So that was what like the historic reason for why it's like so significant. And many people say that like, most of the HBO style, like comprehensive, incredible shows that you see now, like you can thank Twin Peaks in the 90s for that, which kind of makes sense. I mean, there's
when you understand that, like the shows that like were around Twin Peaks were like
Married with Children,
like Walker, Texas Ranger, that type of stuff, and then Twin Peaks was like, whoa. And you
see it too, like there's still a lot of soap opera components within Twin Peaks as well.
Twin Peaks is really incredible. The thing that's like even more incredible to me is Lynch had this vision that he wanted to always kind of keep it a murder mystery throughout the duration of the show. And the pressure from the network was so intense that he had to reveal the killer at the top of season two.
Don't mention it.
No, I'm not going to tell you who the killer is. Okay. Fuck off. But Lynch always maintains that this fundamentally changed the anatomy of the show and kind of killed Twin Peaks momentum.
Well, from what I understand, there's like a lot of drama, right? Like, didn't he kind of quit through season two?
Yeah, I mean, but this it gets back to this, like the network basically pressuring him to do very specific things with the show, because I don't think the network ever knew that it was going to be the phenomenon that it was.
Yeah. Well, they brought it back for, I think there's a movie, and then they brought season 3 and 4 on Showtime, so I can't wait to watch those.
Twin Peaks still gets referenced. Like, anytime you see a little person in front of a red curtain speaking backwards, like, that's...
I mean, there's a very specific reference.
It happens a lot. It happens way more than you think.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, the dream sequences are... I didn't really think it was going to be my vibe, but it definitely, I like it.
Good. Well, if you like that, you got to watch like Mulholland. You got to watch Blue Velvet. Blue Velvet is my favorite by far.
It's like, it's very uncomfortable, but I like it. I like it a lot. That's what I've been watching. I can't wait to see that. What is a Squid show that you were talking about?
Squid Game.
Squid Game?
Squid Game is incredible because I think it is, there are a lot of references to Battle Royale within it. Kind of like dystopian, you know, like thought experiment, human experiment.
Is it a reality TV show or what is it?
No. Oh, no, okay. It's a K-drama.
Ooh.
Which is, I think what is more important to me is like Korean television has made so many programs and so many films like Burning and a lot of films like this that are like so incredible. And Parasite was kind of the United States like first like, that tastes good. Lick into Korean cinema.
For me, Old Boy was that.
Yeah, but I mean, you're a purist like me. You delve for the general audience. The general audience still hasn't seen Old Boy, in my opinion.
Very good.
But this is a good opportunity for like American audiences to get into Korean television, and they're liking it. I think this film is like right now. It's among kind of people who are digging through Netflix. It's already pretty popular. It has 100 on Rotten Tomatoes, but I think this show will be the next like Tiger King to go supernova, where everyone will be like, "Have you seen Squid Game yet? Oh my God, Karen! These Koreans, they're doing crazy things."
So that's cool. Like I don't know if you know this or not, but like I don't know how K dramas work. I know that they're like super popular, but like Turkish soap operas are massively successful both on Netflix and also worldwide.
Yeah.
They get insane distribution in like the entirety of the Middle East and in also Latin American countries as well, because they literally don't stop shooting. They have like 3-hour episodes.
That is and
it's like a season has like 120 episodes, yes. Like 3 hours.
They're
long.
Like the one piece of dramas.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, abuelas fucking eat that shit up, dude. Yeah. They fucking, and also like everyone in the MENA region too. So there's a lot of international content out there.
Yeah,
like,
I mean it's certainly a moment for international cinema. And as someone, you know, who grew up kind of digging through the bargain bins of obscure film stores to be able to watch this stuff, it's really cool that it's making it to the general audience. And I think K-drama in particular, I think when filmmakers see how, for me, I think what Koreans right now excel at more than any other filmmakers is character development. Squid Game is it
a movie or a TV show?
It's a TV show, but for all intents and purposes, it's like a horror. It's supposed to be like Battle Royale, right?
I
like
love
where
that.
It's like people competing and they die if they lose. But their ability to create give you empathy for unique characters enormously quickly really puts a lot of American filmmakers to shame. Like if you were to give most American filmmakers this project, they would make it so campy just right off the gut. And the Koreans have this more sensibility of like, it doesn't matter how insane the storyline is, we're still going to make it grounded and real and make you care about these people.
I love that. Well, I'll definitely be checking that out. Let's do voicemails.
Sure.
We've been holding off on that for a while. We got 5 on the
docket.
Give
me some voicemails.
Hey, Will. Hey, Hassan. I love the podcast. Who does your intro music? It's really good.
Oh, I can tell you right now who does our intro music. You got to go check out Carter. Just Carter on Twitch. So twitch.tv/Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. Amazing musician, awesome stand-up guy, friend of the pod, friend of mine. And Hassan, one night in a delirious fit, I said, Hassan, what do you want for the opening music? And he sent me a word doc that just said like trap shit, retro vibes, tape click, like just random words. And Carter generated that. So also congrats, Carter. Carter just got a formal music manager yesterday. So he's going to be doing performances around the country. If you dig what he makes, he'll be performing.
So does that mean he's going to do the rap that he did for me, the pro police rap that I did?
Oh,
when
yeah.
I was reading like Koideka's lyrics that he wrote as like a conservative rapper.
Well, have you heard his hyperpop song, Socialism Is No House?
No, I have not.
He's made a bunch of amazing hyperpop.
The Bussy Poppin' Boy.
Oh,
one.
Yeah. You're talking about Bussy Boy Poppins and Carfucker? That's a separate project.
That's you.
No. It's Bussy Boy Poppins. Why did you
choose a name that is
no,
so...
He is a very... he's a mysterious artist.
He's a Bussy Boy Poppin'?
Bussy Boy Poppins, yeah.
Bussy Boy Poppins.
Yeah.
That's... I wonder who that is. Okay, well...
Could be anyone. Bussy Boy's... he's all of us, really. Yeah,
looking forward to more collabs with Bussy Boy Poppin'.
Poppins. Not that I'd know, though.
Yeah. Is the new album coming out called Certified Boy Lover?
It's called it's called Most Devious Licks Volume 1.0.
Okay.
next.
Lil Hassan, what's good? It's Vince.
What's up?
I'm loving the pod. I just watched the roast of Hassan. Will, you got that Mitch Hedberg drip,
hey.
Which got me thinking.
Sure.
Who's your all-time dying young legend that like affected you most?
Appreciate
it.
I don't know who Hassan is. Usually I know what Hassan's gonna say, but Hassan doesn't really ascribe to much fandom. No. For me, I grew up, so my mom was a flight attendant and my dad was a lawyer in New York City, so I stayed up late a lot of times waiting for either my mom to get back from LaGuardia or JFK or my dad to get back from Manhattan. So I got into a groove of watching Monday Night Football and Saturday Night Live. I would watch those all the time because my parents were always home so late, and I'd usually be watching one of those shows with one of them. And Saturday Night Live became a huge piece of my life. And so I still remember where I was when I heard that Chris Farley died. I was rollerblading around my cul-de-sac as like a 10-year-old, and it just wrecked me, just sobbing. He was a guy... who I was like too young to really comprehend the kind of like pain and abuse that he was, you know, going through in his life. It just seemed like the day the funny died. And I still carry that. And Chris Farley is still a huge, huge piece of what I do. If I can ever be considered a knockoff Walmart Farley, that would be a big deal for me.
I don't have a young legend who died young. I mean, all the people that I like either died in their old age, like George Carlin.
Yeah.
Or they're still alive. Like, I love Aaron Magruder, creator of the Boondocks. I love Dave Chappelle. Unfortunately, fortunately for them, but unfortunately for the art, maybe, that, like, when you don't die young, we see what you turn into in your old age. Like...
either you die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, you see yourself long enough to become the fucking liberal, like, annoying, you know. Everyone just, like, slowly Bill Maher-ifies their rhetoric. Hopefully Dave Chappelle, you know, not fully there yet, so that's fine. I haven't seen that from Aaron Magruder either, but, you know, we'll see what happens with Jon Stewart, another person that I really loved growing up. And, those are, like, the immediate people that come to my mind that I like. This is such basic bitch taste, by the way. Like, George Carlin, no, Jon Stewart, no, 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 Dave Chappelle, Aaron Magruder.
Aaron Magruder's dope. So yeah. Dope. I like all those people, though. That's not basic bitch shit.
So it's like, you know, but that's what I got. As far as a young legend, died early, Lil Peep. Shouts out to Lil Peep.
Lil Peep, yeah, that's a good answer.
All right, what's the next one?
First, I want to say y'all funny as fuck, and at the hood, watch Hassan.
Let's go.
And I want to know if y'all could fuck any of the X-Men ladies. Which one would y'all fuck?
Storm.
Off the jump like that.
It's not even a question. This is silly.
Wow.
Oh my god. Fucking
I have even... such a different answer.
What?
Rogue.
Okay.
She's got her power is suck. Her power is that she sucks your verve to live.
Okay, well fucking Storm can suck too.
I mean, not like that.
So you do a vortex.
Dude, Gambit literally fucks like with death every time he hooks up with Rogue. Like, that's how good it is.
Gambit was my favorite character. Like, one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, Wolverine. Remy LeBeau. Oh, how you doing, Cher?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I wish I could be a swarmy Louisiana hot guy with card powers.
He's such a... I mean, it's, like, weird because I'm a little conflicted because, like, he does give off, like, date rapist vibes a little bit.
No, come on. No, because you got to understand his relationship
Gambit
with Rogue.
Gambit is literally...
Rogue kills Captain Marvel by accident. So Brie Lawson's character gets murdered by Rogue in the Marvel canon because she, like, hugs her and accidentally hangs on to her for too long, and that's why she can fly and has super strength, because she perma-sucked her. So she's got commitment issues, Hassan. He can see through her trauma.
Nah, I'm fucking... I'm sticking by. I think Storm.
No, but...
You know what? It's just like... Wait, how did the X-Men intro song go? That was pretty good.
Yo, honorable mention to Jubilee, though. Very hot.
Oh, God. I feel like Jubilee is like high school, okay?
When I watched the show, I was 5.
Okay, all right. Well, still, I just like, I don't know. The Storm for me, for sure.
Yeah, no, Storm.
And then, I can't believe I forgot. Mystique. Second, Mystique, yeah.
Mystique can be anyone.
Mystique, 100%. Mystique can be anyone. Yeah. Mystique as Dua Lipa.
Wow. Dua Lipa.
Okay. And then midway through, she turns into fucking, who does she turn into? I don't want to say. All right, that was a thorough answer. Going.
Me. She turns into me with my new hair. Go ahead, play.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Hey, Hassan.
Hey, Hassan. Well, with natural disasters becoming stronger and more frequent, what point do you think leaders and government bodies are actually give a shit in terms of stopping climate change? Thanks.
Bro. Never. Our leaders literally let Louisiana fall into the ocean. Never.
It's never happening.
It's not going to happen.
Nope. Especially because climate change and its like most devastating consequences are happening over the course of many years. So we have as humans this profound ability to adapt to any condition. So we're slowly adapting to that being the new norm. And while that's happening, the biggest victims of climate change are always going to be poor people. You see that already. If it's like impacting a poor area, boom, it's over. Like, yep, sorry, your house got fucked. It's done. There's nothing we can do about it.
Do you know when we'll fix climate change? When the green energy alternatives can offer the government more money than crude oil.
Yeah, I mean, that, or I don't even know. I mean, we're already moving towards that. That's why, like, Shell, British Petroleum, all these, like, big gas-guzzling giants are, you know, purchasing renewable energy companies right now, so they can have a fucking ownership stake in that,
and they can also keep pumping that sweet, sweet earth blood while saying we're working on making a better future.
Exactly, but ultimately, like everything that you hate that has been bastardized over the course of like the past 20 years that hyper focuses on only marginally better products that are being shelled out to you every single fucking year. That's because we have short-term profit motive incentives. Like, we are hyper-focusing American corporations and corporations all around the world exclusively hyper-focus on, you know, return on investment for their shareholders, their quarterly earnings. And so we unfortunately lack vision for a better future. And that manifests in even consumerism and the way that you recognize, like, the new iPhone is just the same as the old iPhone. But, like, your old iPhone you can no longer use when the new one rolls out. You know, that's, like, made to break technology.
Obsolescence. Yeah,
exactly. That kind of thinking is unfortunately making it an impossible thing to defeat the worldwide effort that we all need to engage in to tackle climate change, or anthropogenic climate change, rather. Sorry, I was bummy, but it's the truth.
Do we have one more? We can do one more. Right. Hell yeah.
Hi, Hassan and Will. I'm your fan from Dubai.
Nice.
And hey. I want to tell you guys that very recently I've started to really like myself. I've really started to, you know, like how I look, like how I,
nice.
how I act, how I am as a person, and I've really become much more self-confident. But a problem that I've been running into is coming to accept that I'm confident, if that makes sense. I almost feel like a guilt for being confident about myself. It's like a very internalized self-hatred, I guess. So how do you think I could overcome that? Thank you.
Yeah, I got you, brother. You got a little bit of survivor's guilt. I understand that. You know, Hassan and I both, former kind of gluttons and stuff like that. Who didn't
former
really,
gluttons, still a glutton.
Yeah, who didn't really love what we had going on in our life. I'm going to tell you, a big way to be okay with doing better is helping people. Don't pull up the ladder behind you. You know what I mean? If you've made formative change in your life that makes you more confident, that makes you happier, go around to the people around you who are, you know, not doing so well, who are dragging, and do your best to uplift them. And I guarantee you, not only is that going to be satisfying, it's going to make you feel better about what you have. It's always this balance of doing well by yourself, but use that as a vehicle to do well by others. And that'll create balance for sure.
That was really good. I don't even have anything extra. It's just, it's a matter of time, man. You're going to get used to it. You're going to get used to your newly developed confidence, and ultimately you'll stop feeling guilt for it. You shouldn't at all. I mean, you should never feel guilt for self-improvement. It's an awesome thing. So, you know, it's easier said than done, but I promise you won't feel so bad in you know, a short period of time. All right.
We did it.
That's it. We survived. That was the first ever brand read that we did too today. So, I can't believe it. We're still here. Fear and Malding, baby.
All these weeks later.
Make sure to like, subscribe, and review the podcast. We are going to be rolling out those anime body pillows. Yes, you know Sky Blue?
Yeah.
She's a famous adult actress.
I know exactly. I've heard of her or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was talking about how she wants one of my body pillows, except.
Oh, she doesn't want mine?
And then
we're out of here.
I was like, hey, like, sure, I can give you body pillows. She's like, I want to go on a date and get one of your body pillows.
Hey, buddy in Dubai, you want to stay feeling good about yourself? Don't have a friend like Hassan, okay?
Oh, okay.
I can hear my self-confidence falling off a cliff every day.
Okay, there you go. I level his self. His head would fucking explode if it wasn't for me.
Exactly.
Get a friend like me who fucking puts you down.
the last thing I'd say is... more important than us still being here, you're still here. I have been amazed by the outreach that all of you in the community, every time I stream, every time I hop on Twitter, you guys are giving us feedback on the pod, and you're so juiced. And I see so many comments like, I just headed to work and the new Fear and Malding came out and it made my day. That kind of stuff sustains us. And it's been the most meaningful part of Fear and Malding. It's great to be able to have ads on here. You know, obviously that helps us, but truly the most sustaining part of Fear and Malding has been developing a community separate from what we do on Twitch, and having you guys enjoy what we do every week so much. So thank you to the listeners. We're a real boy podcast now, and we have you to thank for that.
Yep. All right. On that note, peace.
Yep. Adios.
I'm saying it, dude.
What's up, everybody?
If you just enjoyed that episode, I need you to do the following. Put your hand on your mouse. Move that mouse in an orbital fashion until the cursor lands atop one of the buttons you see on your screen. Hit the subscribe. Hit the bell. Hit the follow. Whatever you please, so that you can get the most Fear and Malding for your buck.